Well, hello, hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the podcast. As always, I'm your host, Chad Michael Bowen, and thank you so much for clicking on another brand new episode of Hindsight is 2200. Thank you all so much for all the love and support. It really means a lot. I mean, my goodness, just looking at the numbers that we've averaged just in this month alone, it's been absolutely crazy. So thank you guys so much for all the love and support. It really just means a lot. If you know anybody that would like to listen to the podcast, please let them know we are on Anchor, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. Hindsight is 20/200. Please remember to put the slash in between 2200. All righty. Well, today we have an amazing guest that been talking back to forth. Actually, had one of a person that he's actually worked with and is familiar with, Rin Leach, a great friend of the podcast. He's done some work for my guest today, and he is the head of audio description for IDC. Please welcome my guest, the great and powerful Eric Wickstrom.
Wow, thank you, Chad. Thanks for having me. That's slightly overblown, but I appreciate it.
I always like to tell people, I'm going to try and make you feel like you're getting that red carpet, you know, or like that Hall of Fame induction kind of introduction, you know, make you feel good.
Yeah, well, mission accomplished. Thank you.
Hey, well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I know you're a very busy man, so thank you for taking time out of your schedule to come talk to me today.
Oh, absolutely. No, it's a pleasure to be here.
I'm sorry. Well, we're going to get into it today. I think the best place to start, if you could just, you know, introduce yourself to my lovely listeners, that'd be a great place for us to start.
Sure. My name is Eric Wickstrom. As you said, I am the head of audio description for International Digital Center, IDC for short. Mm-hmm. We have locations both in New York City and Los Angeles. I oversee the production on both coasts for all things related to audio description.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, like I said, mentioned Rin Leach in the introduction, you know, love Rin, good friend of the podcast, you know, been a supporter since day one. You know, and I'm a big fan of audio description. You know, I'm also a big fan of dubbing. So, you know, lip syncing and stuff like that. So, you know, I was talking to Rin, all the work that he does as a blind voice actor and a blind actor. And funny enough, I had come across IDC, well, more so you on Twitter, and, you know, clicked on the link to see what IDC was about. And I was just really blown away by what the company is doing, because I mean, it's doing a lot of great stuff and promoting, you know, something that I'm very passionate about, which is audio description. Because of course, as a legally blind person, audio description is so important for me as a viewer. And the fact that you have worked on some pretty, you know, important, you know, properties, and also have a lot of actors who themselves have a visual impairment, that really stuck with me. And I was just really, you know, inspired to, you know, get to know you more and check into you. And I've loved everything that you guys have been doing ever since.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. Now Ren's awesome. Mm-hmm. I contacted him actually probably a couple months ago. Mm-hmm. We had a project come in and it was, you know, important to me that it's important to us in general that we are constantly onboarding and working with new and existing blind and low vision talents. Mm-hmm. To your point, I think mm-hmm. we're up to, I think it's 14 or 15 individuals mm-hmm. now that are working with us on, you know, when I say steady basis, nobody does, you know, 100 projects with me a year, but we try to make sure, you know, we unlike some companies, we have a very diverse and very changing roster of voiceover mm-hmm. talent project to project. You know, we'll use 40 to 50 different voices a year on projects, depending on the content and mm-hmm. the tone we're looking for. So, you know, so we have 15 blind or visually impaired folks now too, that are in the rotation that are working with us on all different kinds of properties as well. But this mm-hmm. one particular one was one that I was like, we're going to absolutely use a blind and visually impaired or impaired narrator mm-hmm. on this property. And we didn't have anybody on the roster that worked, mm-hmm. to be honest, because again, sometimes just being blind doesn't mean you're a fit, you know, you mm-hmm. still have to fit the tone of the show, the background of the show. So I found Ren through Twitter. Like you said, mm-hmm. I'm very active on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And I saw him, I listened to his demo, and I was like, this guy's awesome. And yeah. there's probably no way, I can afford him, frankly, because he does a lot of, like you said, promo and commercial. And that's mm-hmm. just a much different realm of income potential than AD is, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And I said, so probably can't afford him, and he's probably too busy. and he's probably not interested. So I reached out on a whim, and like I think within a half hour, he wrote back and was like, "Yeah, I'm in. Let's do it." First, which blew my mind. I think it was the first time anyone had reached out to him to offer the opportunity, which was crazy to me because this guy is like I said earlier, just so talented, and beyond that, incredibly lovely to work with.
Yeah,
which is even more important. Honestly, people ask me, how do you get into voiceover? And you know, everybody has a voice. You can train and you can work and you can do everything you got to do to make yourself sound better. But if you're unreliable or just unpleasant to work with, you're not going to work. Like, I'm not going to hire people I don't enjoy being around. So when you get somebody, a lot of times in this business, you'll find people that you tolerate because they're so uber talented, or you'll find people that you tolerate because they're so lovely, even if they're not that great. You just like them, so you want to work with them. But Ren is one of those very rare, like 5 percenters, where they're just top talent and and top person. So yeah, no, I'm glad that, you know, I was able to find him and he had time to spare, and I'll be working with him again. I don't think he even knows it, but I'm going to be reaching out to him in the next week or so. A couple more things on the docket that I have him in mind for. So, but yeah, so as far as the visually impaired folks go, that is definitely a focus. My head writer, Liz Gutman, who's also very active on Twitter and a lot of community outreach. People probably know her from the various, you know, workshops she's done, various talks she's given, panels she sits on. She's actually one of the teachers for the audio description training retreats now. She is really, you know, she doesn't like when I say she's the best, but I will say she is, there's no one better than Liz in the industry. And I'm so lucky to have her along with my other writers who we can talk about. I really have for my money, the best, you know, the best team in the business. So I'm very blessed that way. But Liz and I, you know, every couple of years or every year we would sit down. She's been with me for about 3.5-4 years now. And every year we would sit down and we'd say, what do we want to do this year? Because it's been expanding. Like since I came to IDC, we can get more into that. But the department's grown quite a bit. And so at one point, Liz was like, I'd love to get blind people voicing the tracks. And at that point, we didn't have a workflow. We had no idea what we were doing or how to get that done. Like, how do you bring people in the booth and how do they read scripts? And is that Braille readers or is that? We had no idea how that was going to work. And then something happened that was really good for this workflow, which wasn't good for anyone else, was the pandemic.
Right.
And when the pandemic happened, everything went remote.
Right.
So everything had to get figured out, sighted or otherwise. And a man by the name of Thomas Reed, who I don't know if you're familiar with Thomas, he has a podcast as well called Read My Mind Radio. He invited Liz and I on to talk about audio description. This is 2.5 years ago, whatever it was. And just through that conversation, the light bulb went off, you know, talking about how he works and how he does script reading and all this stuff. And I just, after the podcast appearance, I reached out separately and said, hey, do you want to try doing an AD track with me? And let's figure this, let's just figure it out, basically. Let's just figure out how this is going to work. And he and I kind of just did that. We just volleyed back and forth. We played with the script format and we played with the recording setup and how this was going to work and how this was going to mix and all that good stuff. And that project was something for Netflix called Skin Decision. That was the first project we launched with a blind narrator. And I think now we're up to, it's gotta be 50, 60 projects at this point, maybe more tracks that we've had voiced by blind and visually impaired folks. But so that was 2 years ago. And so Thomas helped out a lot there. And then after Thomas, you know, again, just through either ignorance or just assumption, I just thought, okay, we got it. We got the workflow figured out now. And then, you know, as I started reaching out to other blind and visually impaired talent, we started realizing not everybody's going to work that way. Some people are going to work different ways. Some people want to use Braille readers and some people want to use, you know, audio playback in their headset. So, so we had to come up with 3 or 4 different workflows. So there's not just, now we don't have just one workflow for blind and visually impaired. We have, you know, 4 or 5 that we can employ if needed. So it's been a lot of learning. We just had our first, well, we've had two. We had, Nefertiti come in. She's very active on Twitter as well. She voiced something with me in the booth and she came in and used the screen reader in the booth and that worked pretty well. Live, we did that one and we want to get her back in and try some of the Braille reader in the booth itself. So we're going to try that as well. So, you know, again, we're constantly trying different things as well and trying to evolve those workflows the best we can. So we have, you know, all the tools in the box that we need, so to speak. So whoever comes in, we can adapt to them and their individual needs. So yeah, it's been a lot of trial and error, and it's worked out really, really well. The tracks, for the most part, they all sound really, really great. You never know, nor should you, that it's a blind individual doing the work. It sounds as good as any other track we produce. Mm-hmm. That's, of course, the biggest paramount thing is the quality. Mm-hmm. We're not looking to work with blind people just because they're blind. They also have to have talent, obviously, and have a professional setup mm-hmm. and things like that. But with that said, I'll help you get set up. We will, we'll help you with mic selections and getting yourself soundproofed and all that good stuff as well. We've done that for some folks as well. So, but that's kind of the genesis of how all that came about. So, going back 2.5 years ago, and it's ongoing. We're continuing to do the outreach, and I'm hoping, I think it's, like I said, we're at 14 or 15 now, and I'm certainly hoping that grows to 20, 24 in the next year. We certainly want to keep adding folks and working with people. We have British blind narrators, and we have folks of all different races and backgrounds in North America as well, because we want to make sure we're being diverse within the diversity, if that makes sense. We don't want to just be throwing somebody blind on a project and saying, okay, well, there's the diversity. No, it still has to fit the content as well and the background of the material. So yeah, that's kind of the genesis of all that and how it came to be, and something we are going to continue to do. And I certainly hope some of our competitors get on board and explore the possibilities as well, because it's certainly worth doing the work.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's crazy to think that, kind of within the last 2 years, really, that this has, come about and really taken off and shaped, become like a really big backbone of the company.
Yeah, it's definitely a focus for sure. Audio description generally is a focus, not only working with the blind community, but making sure that we're evolving our standards and evolving our approach and revisiting our approach and revisiting what we're doing with AD, making sure that we're talking to members of the community through, outreach and social media, and Liz is on the Facebook boards, and, I don't deal with Facebook, to be honest with you, but I am very active on Twitter, where you found me, and things like that. So, we are soliciting feedback. We want to know. I always say, if I just wanted to hear how great I am, I would just call my mother and she would tell me, and I could get on with my day. I don't need to, but we don't want to just hear that. We want to hear, the bad too. Luckily, there's not a lot of bad,
right?
Since I do feel we do exceptional work for the most part. So mostly it's positive, but there have been times where people, hey, I didn't like that, or this could have been better, or you guys maybe could have done that. And now listen, opinions are like, we know what opinions are like. So everybody's got one. And so sometimes, to be honest, okay, it's one person's opinion. We don't agree with it at all. And we kind of move on and we kind of just go with the majority point of view. But there's often times where people come to us with suggestions, we'll call them, and we definitely will have a discussion and, and we'll see, maybe this is a better path forward. That certainly happened with Bridgerton famously with the first season, and this is now documented. The Wall Street Journal came in a couple months ago and did a nice piece on season 2 of Bridgerton, but as a profile of us as well and our approach to the work. And Bridgerton first launched, audio description hadn't evolved yet in terms of the description of race and characters and the way we talk about sexuality and audio description and things like that. So so that was really a catalyst of change. And we took a lot of fire for that. Now, we were just operating under best standard practices and we didn't do anything wrong. I didn't feel the need to apologize because we didn't do anything wrong, but the complaints were valid and the complaints were heard and they were addressed, and we were very lucky and fortunate that we get to work with a company like Netflix who really does care. And they really, really care about this end product, and they want to make sure that they're doing great work for the community. So when season 2 came up, they came to us and they asked me, hey, would you like to revisit season 1? And would you like, and I said, hell yes, we would like to revisit season 1. We'd like to start over from scratch. Just hit record and start over. And they said, great, and they let us do it. And so we went back and she rewrote all the scripts and added all the stuff people were looking for in terms of, again, the race of characters and the heightened adult language for the sex scenes and things like that. And we brought the VO talent and we just started over and we took that approach through season 2. And so that track has been, there's not very many content providers that would have cared enough to do that. And yeah. Netflix did. And again, it was something that we always wished we, you know, there's a lot of tracks. I've been involved in 10,000 or more audio description tracks in my, mm-hmm. you know, last decade in the business. And there are plenty of tracks over the years that I wish I could get a do-over on.
Mm-hmm.
We've never done anything that's perfect. There's always something, oh, we could change mm-hmm. that or we could tweak that. You got to just do the best you can, let it out to the universe. And, you know, hopefully people like it. That's all you can do sometimes.
Right.
But that was one we really, really wanted a do-over on just mm-hmm. for so many, many reasons that we were hearing from the community. And mm-hmm. we were so grateful to get that chance. So, and now again, that was a good catalyst to evolve our approach and to work with our clients to, you know, bring these issues forward. And it's a big focus of Liz's privately behind the scenes. She has been pushing for this for years. So, mm-hmm. you know, it was some definite short-term pain for us as a department. We definitely heard the backlash, and we definitely took some shots, rightfully so, looking, you know, in terms of how people were feeling. Mm-hmm. Again, not that we did anything wrong.
Right.
But in the end, it actually wound up being a really positive experience because the community was loud. But more importantly, they were heard. They're always loud. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people just ignore them, and that's always unfortunate. So in this case, they were heard loud and clear, and the situation was remedied. So mm-hmm. yeah, that was great. So that's kind of how some of that came about.
Yeah, that's so cool. And you know, and I've heard a lot of stories. You know, of course, there's always bad versus good, but I've heard a lot of good stories when it comes to Netflix and how much they care about the end product when they're creating, you know, the series. And I think that's so amazing of them to give you the opportunity to go back and basically re-record everything from scratch. Because I know for the people that had those concerns and those, you know, constructive criticisms, it meant a lot to them too, that you were able to get that chance to re-record everything, because then, like you said, you addressed all of, you know, everything that was told to you from that first season and were able to go back and basically recorrect it. And, you know, make sure that everyone's voice had gotten heard. So they knew it's like, it was, you know, we heard you and we listened and, you know, and we changed it.
Yeah. Again, it's, you know, I'm hesitant to use the word correct.
Right.
Because that implies that something was done wrong. Now in the greater view,
mm-hmm.
I think we could all agree now that it was wrong for all those years to be ignoring those things. This mm-hmm. is something, again, behind the scenes, I was having conversations. Liz has had conversations with clients over the years, not just Netflix. We work with a large group of clients. Mm-hmm. And so, but everybody was just kind of following the blueprint from 20, 25 years ago.
Gotcha.
The rules, you know, the rules of audio description that were written by a couple of individuals. Mm-hmm. And this has been kind of, this is the blueprint everybody followed forever.
Gotcha.
And so, again, nobody did anything wrong. They were just doing what we were supposed to be doing. So I don't look at it as a corrective. Again, mm-hmm. I like to use the word evolve. I feel like nothing was wrong mm-hmm. in terms of what we were doing, but certainly now it's better. I will
admit that.
It's mm-hmm. better for these changes having been made, but it's definitely an evolution. And mm-hmm. it's definitely again, being able to reexamine mm-hmm. not only the approach to those issues, but there's a lot of things, audio description, that have been too rigid, whether mm-hmm. it's the things we're talking about specifically with this topic or just the way voiceover was done.
Right.
You know, for years where it was so monotone and flat. And just mm-hmm. in the last few years, you're hearing, you know, that the life come into the read, so to speak. Mm. Now you still don't want a performance.
Right.
It's still not supposed to be that. It's not supposed to be distracting, but that flat, monotone, boring, for, you know, that's the word.
Yeah.
Boring read. That's kind of going away, you know, and that's a good thing. And I think, you know, I've heard some tracks that kind of overcorrected for it and were becoming too performance-like.
Gotcha.
But I think that generally people are figuring it out. And I think you're starting to get that life in the track a little bit more. So that's been a big change too.
Yeah.
And I think that helps the overall quality of the track. So, you know, it all comes down to, I say this all the time, it's 85, 90% is the script. That's far and away the most important component. There's not even a close second. There's nothing even within the same realm as the script.
Right.
So, but, you know, the VO could certainly make a great script sound kind of boring. So you want to make sure, you know, you're concentrating on that. And then, of course, the audio mix, which is another thing that gets ignored by a lot of companies.
Yeah, yeah.
Take a lot of focus on at IDC. those mm-hmm. three elements have to kind of commingle and interact in a way that mm-hmm. comes together into that final product. So they're all equally can sync the thing, but mm-hmm. You know, if one of them's out of whack, but nothing as much as a bad script can just torpedo the whole thing.
Right, right.
Yeah. You can't make a great product with a bad script.
Yeah.
Can't. Yeah. AD television, you can't do it. So
yeah.
That's you know, where the focus has to stay. But yeah, mm-hmm. it's all this is playing audio description. I've been, again, 10 years doing this work. Mm-hmm. In the last year and a half, I've seen changes that I never thought I'd see, just mm-hmm. because people are so rigidly locked in. And so I'm glad to be a small part of that change. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's all heading in a really solid direction for the mm-hmm. most part.
Yeah. It is better to use evolve, you know, transformed, you know, just kind of just, you know, making people think differently, you know, not, you know, putting them in those tight boxes where they have to always do things the same way over and over again. But yeah, like that yeah, definitely. I think evolution's a way better word to use. And, you know, definitely one thing that I think a lot of people, you know, at least, you know, when I say this, I'm saying it from like the approach of cartoons and animation. I think a lot of people got new respect for sound engineers, especially during the pandemic, because of all the work they do when it comes to the mixing and mastering of these tracks. I think for, you know, a long time, they're kind of the unsung heroes when it comes to recording and audio description. So I definitely think they got a lot more respect because of the, you know, the work people were actually being able to see them do. So that was great too.
Well, yeah, I think that people, I think the problem with audio description generally is that mm-hmm. there's just too much bad audio description.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that sadly, up until 3 or 4 years ago, no one knew the difference really, because mm-hmm. it was mostly bad.
Meh.
It was mostly bad, because mm-hmm. there are a couple handful of, you know, companies that are, you know, quote unquote my competitors,
right,
who just do awful work, and they've been doing awful work for a very long time,
mm-hmm.
and the companies that employ them, either they don't know mm-hmm. or they don't care, mm-hmm. or it's a combination of both,
mm-hmm.
but they just crank it out. So I think the last couple of years were, you know, where we, you know, IDC's, our department's only been around 5 years. I've been here mm-hmm. like 5 years I've been here. So yeah. The department was there maybe like 4 to 6 months before I got there, before I kind of came on board and started, mm-hmm. you know, taking it in the direction we've gone. And so that, you know, we weren't doing a lot of big projects, obviously, mm-hmm. in the beginning, because we were an unknown entity. And, you know, it's taken a few years and you know, we got, I'd say like a year and a half, 2 years after I arrived there, we started getting some higher profile projects in,
mm-hmm.
and we started getting to do those. And then as those, we did those, I think people, our clients started realizing, oh, these, I think our clients started to hear the difference. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like I got a note back from a client, I can't tell you who, but you know, we got involved with them like a couple years ago, and a year and a half, 2 years ago, we got involved with mm-hmm. them. And they had employed some of those really bad companies that I was talking about. They, right. they kind of got there before us, and we did a project for them, and we sent the first season of something back to them, and we got a note back them saying, well, this is exceptional audio description. Like they had never heard good AD at that point. And
right.
unfortunately they had already employed and contracted, you know, many, many, many tracks of audio description from these subpar companies, because they didn't know the difference. They just said,
right.
you know, they hire these companies who've got 15, 20 years experience and they have thousands of titles, and they go, oh, they must know what they're doing. And sadly, mm-hmm. the opposite, they have no idea what they're doing,
yeah.
and they don't care to know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
If they did, they'd be a lot better at it. So that's the frustrating part. So I think that, to the point of that is, I think the community, so as we started getting some higher profile stuff and it, you know, big, big titles that people are streaming, mm-hmm. through these different services, and
right.
in addition to some of my competitors like a Descriptive Video Works who are good and care about the work, and
mm-hmm.
you know, if you get a chance to talk to Reese, the head of their department, he super passionate and mm-hmm. like just really, really cares. And then you have the people at Deluxe that do exceptional work,
mm-hmm.
you know, the Book of Boba Fett and
oh yeah phenomenal
Mandalorian, you know, the Pixar stuff, they just mm-hmm. really phenomenal audio description that they do as well. And then Anna, who's the director over there, she cares and she's been there a while. And so there are really good people in this industry that I do come in contact with that really, really want to do great work and want to get better and evolve and have the same kind of approach to it that I'm talking about with us, where we're reaching out and we're engaging and we're looking to evolve and get better all the time. So as companies like us and Deluxe and DBW, as they started doing higher profile stuff as well that people were listening to, I think the last 3 or 4 years, people are starting to finally understand and hear good audio description. And more importantly, being able to recognize bad AD and being able to call it out. Because for too many years, the conversation focused around quantity. It was fair because there wasn't enough of it. And frankly, there's still not enough of it because everything should be described. Just like everything is captioned, everything should be described. It shouldn't be, you know, we shouldn't be checking mandates and we shouldn't be just doing the bare minimum. We should be doing everything. And more importantly, we should be doing everything as well as we can do it. 100%. So I think for a lot of years that people were just focused on quantity and they were just what I kind of the analogy I've used other times and people have heard me say this before. I think the blind community was forced to be just kind of really happy to be getting the scraps from the table, so to speak. And they really should be the expectation should have been sitting down to a full meal. You know what I mean? So, and that needs to be where the focus goes now. Now the quantity is there. It's not going away. I don't believe that any of these big streaming services are going to be dropping audio description. I think they see the value. You see the competition. There's millions and millions and millions of eyeballs and ears available. And there's only a finite amount of things you can subscribe to. And we see this every week. There's a new story about this service added this many viewers and this service lost this many viewers and what it means. So I think they understand the value in engaging with millions of potential consumers in the blind and visually impaired community. So the track, so what I try to implore people in the community, it's not going away. So I would feel free to, you know, start demanding quality.
Right.
You know, the quantity is here. Now let's start holding people accountable for bad AD. And also more importantly, and I say this a lot, if you hear good AD, you should talk about that too, because too much is, and this is just human nature, you know, like if you go on Yelp or you go on any review site, you know, most of the stuff is people going on to complain. That's when you write a review or you launch a complaint. I'd say just human nature, you're more likely to complain than to take time to say that was great. But the companies read this stuff. They do. If you tag, you know, streaming service A and say, hey, this track stinks. And this company created it and this company sucks and you shouldn't work with this company anymore, that they will see that. Okay. They will. And you may get that company washed out. You might. I mean, there are streaming services that I work with that if you don't do good enough work, they will bounce you out. I mean, Netflix will bounce you out. If you do bad work, they will bounce you out. That they don't want to work with subpar providers. Now, I can't speak to other companies that they just, again, are just trying to get the work done. So if you call out bad companies, they will see that. They will say, all right, maybe we should look to use somebody else if this company is doing such bad work. But the problem is who? They're not hearing about IDCs. They're not hearing about the Deluxes. I mean, not that they have to hear about Deluxe. Deluxe is plenty big enough. It's DBW. But, you know, if you do, instead of, you know, if you hear a great track, not just for me, but anyone else, if someone does a really exceptional track of audio description that you really like, I would encourage people to tweet that out. Hey, you know, hey, streaming service A or B, I love this track of audio description by this company. They do exceptional work. I really hope that you get to use them for more projects in the future. It would really be great to hear them do more work. You know, because they will see that as well. So, you know, because the problem is if you just complain, they might drop that bad service, but then they're going to just take it to another crappy service. because the biggest provider of AD out there is the worst provider of AD out there, frankly. And a lot of times what happens is companies will send, they somewhere along the line, captioning and audio description got packaged. Why? I don't know. They're completely, it's like apples and oranges. They're not remotely the same thing. There's not remotely the same skill set needed to accomplish the work. It's really stupid, honestly, that these things are just packaged as a check-all kind of thing. So there are companies out there that are very skilled doing auctioning work, but that's, you know, that's not super hard to figure out. But they have no business doing audio description.
Right.
So we find that now too. Like I can't go into specifics, but we did a show, audio description for a company. I'll just say it's a very, very, very big show.
Right.
And, everybody knows what it is.
Yep.
And in terms of everybody's aware of it in the universe,
it's very, right.
It's a well-known entity. So we did the AD for that. Uh-huh. And there's a prequel, sequel, some other things coming down the road.
Right.
He reached out. Hey, we'd love to be involved with this since we did the other thing.
Uh-huh.
And the note we got back is, oh, we're probably just going to give it to the company that does the captioning.
Wow.
So, yeah, wow. But I know. Like, so that track's not going to be good. It's just not.
Yeah.
And it's a bummer because it should be good. And it could be good. You can bring it to me. Or you can bring it to one of my competitors that I already mentioned, but bring it to me, you know?
Right, right.
So it could be good, but there's still this weird thing where a lot of companies and a lot of production companies, because don't forget, a lot of production companies are tasked by the place where that show or movie is landing to provide the AD along with the finished product.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of streaming services are not involved in the nuts and bolts of creating AD. They just want to provide it with the source material. So the companies, the production companies that are creating the source material are just doing the same thing. They're just taking the captioning company and saying, create the AD as well. And that's not really a good approach if you want quality audio description, generally speaking. Again, we do IDC does captioning too. So we do that as well. We do both. And obviously if you're getting them both from us, then you're getting a good product on both sides. But in other companies, like I already mentioned, you're getting a good product on both sides. But there are these companies out there that are doing audio captioning work that have no business in the space of AD. So that's another thing the community has to understand too, is when you're complaining to the streaming service, sometimes the streaming service has nothing to do with the actual creation of the AD. Now, that's not an excuse. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean that it should be excused that they're hosting bad quality AD on their site. But, you know, they're not, they need to be educated. They need to be told.
Right.
So, you know, and they will listen. Again, nobody out there in the streaming world wants to be looked upon as providing bad content. or subpar content, especially to a marginalized group of disabled folks. You know what I mean? Like, that's not what the light they want to be shown in. Or, you know, so again, people get, and I understand the frustration, and there's a lot of, you know, I see the term ableism thrown around a lot, oftentimes very justified, but sometimes it's just, again, it's just people are not, there's two kinds of ignorant. There's ignorant people that want to learn and there's an opportunity to educate them.
Right.
And then there's people that are just willfully ignorant, don't care.
Yes, 100%.
So understanding that difference is important. And just because something is coming across as ableism, it might just be as simple as this person needs to have a conversation with somebody else, and they very well might be open to that conversation and learning. So when you start calling people ableists, when you start labeling people racist, I was called a racist for the Bridgerton thing. Originally, I'm certainly not a racist. It was an unfair charge.
Right. Yeah.
But I got a thicker skin, but I didn't just shut down, but when you attack people with that kind of language without knowing them or knowing A, where it's coming from, and B, how they were limited, you know, in presenting that work. Cause again, I don't make the rule, my clients do. So when you attack people without trying to engage in conversation first, I think it shuts down the conversation.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, 100%.
And I think it's counterproductive. So these are the things I try to touch on in these conversations just because, you know, I think they're important. And I think at the end, I know that my team wants the same thing as the community. We want to make sure that the product is as good as it can be. I can't speak for some of my competitors, as I said, but we certainly care enough to make it great. The thing that we've adopted, it's kind of we just adopted it. Maybe it's from talking to Thomas originally, but you know, the kind of our mantra of our AD room and our group is good enough isn't good enough. That's how we approach the work. That's what the standard I've set for my team. And I'm just grateful that my team is so amazing that they've all just completely bought into that 100%. Good enough is not good enough. We will never strive for good enough. And I feel like as long as you continue to keep focus on doing exceptional work, you won't always get there. You're going to fall short, But if you aim for exceptional, it's going to wind up being very good, you know, and if you aim for good, it's going to be fair to bad a lot of times. So that's kind of our approach to how we do things. And again, I think a conversation goes a long way into these common goals.
Yeah, 100%. I love that mantra. That's something definitely to live by. And, you know, I 100% agree with you. It is very just human nature. We love to just scream at what sucks and what we think is bad. And we often overlook how much it also is helpful to tell someone when something good has happened. So like you said, if you're going to tell a company like a Netflix or a Hulu or a Amazon, you know, Prime, whatever it is, it's like, hey, the people doing this project, they're not good. And you tell them why. Well, like you said, give them, you know, option, you know, the next option, and make it the one that you know is doing a good job. Because like you said, if you just tell them that this sucks and you don't give them an alternative to how to fix it and make it better, then you're never going to fix the problem and things aren't going to get better. So definitely agree with you that sometimes we often fixate so much on just telling things and telling people what they did wrong and how it's bad, instead of like telling them the better alternatives that can help, you know, evolve things further.
Yeah. And people, you know, it's like I said, human nature, it's the era that we're in. It's the ugliness of social media. Mm-hmm. A lot of times I had somebody, you know, three followers on Twitter attack one of my voiceover people a few weeks back and say some not nice things about her and another professional in the industry who I know well, but I have worked with, who's very, very prolific. And, you know, she saw it and she, you know, her feelings were hurt. And, you know, that sucked because, you know, a lot of people, listen, it's like everything. Everybody's got an opinion. It's a matter of personal taste. Now for this person, she might not be his cup of tea. But on the other side, I have people who literally tell me that she's their favorite narrator that I have. So you're not going to please everybody. But, you know, again, I encourage people, it's okay to, you know, if something's a legitimate, you know, problem or you have a legitimate, like I said, some kind of constructive criticism.
Right.
Like she's one of the people that's been doing it the longest that I work with. So she still comes from that old school and we're working on getting her more, you know, elevated in terms of her read, punching it up a little bit. Because she's still kind of in that old school, you know, less nuanced read, less animated read. But she certainly has it in her. I've known her a long time. She can punch it up. So we're working on, again, bringing that to the current expectations. So there is a way to say, hey, I wish, you know, you guys would punch it up a little more on these reads, things like that. But just saying, I find this person to suck or whatever you want to say. It's just, you know, it's just in the hide behind, like, you know, they hiding behind an anonymous you know, emoji or whatever, fake name. It's just ugly. Because, you know, again, keeping that in mind too, like AD narration generally, which I wish the community would recognize as well, it does not pay as much as it should generally. There are some people, excuse me, hold on a second.
No problem.
So there are some people out there that are making exceptional rates doing narration for various reasons. But generally speaking, people that are working in AD narration, there's other avenues within voiceover that you could be making more money. So really, they love the work. They take pride in the work. Not to say they're not making a good wage. They are. They're making a certainly fair wage. But you know, in order to do audio description in any way professionally, no one's getting rich doing it. There are people making livings, but I'm going to assure you there are 100 different ways in the entertainment industry to make more money than working in audio description. You have to love doing it and you have to take pride in doing it. And I think people need to understand the people that are doing this work, that they almost, you know, the people that are doing it well, I should say, they truly feel a calling to it. You know, if you ever get a chance to talk to Liz or Dakota or Steven or Betty or any of my writers, they would all tell you the same thing, or just my new writer, Katie, who just came on board. Like, it's a calling. It's something that they're drawn to, that they have, they understand that they're serving a higher purpose, so to speak. And they're trying to do the best work possible. So when you attack these people anonymously or whatnot, just for whatever piece of joy that brings you in that moment. You know, these are real life people.
Yeah.
You know, and they do make mistakes. Same thing. Right. Like we've had the community catch mistakes in our tracks. Now we have a thorough QC process, something that a lot of companies just skip entirely, which blows my mind to think about, but we really try to get it right. And there was there was a project that we did a few months ago, very, very popular project that a lot of people saw. There were over the course of the series, I think I was something around 42,000 words of audio description that my writer wrote, 42,000 words.
Yeah.
And they misidentified a character one time by accident. They flipped the name and it got through my QC person. And this person on the internet who had quite a bit of followers, tens of thousands of followers, went on and like made fun of them. Like, oh, look at this. They named, and I'm like, you know, like, and the person follows me that did it. So they could have just pinged me and privately, and
right,
we would have fixed it, which we did immediately. But instead of like doing it that way, they just decided to like make it a joke and try to embarrass my writer again, who had written 41,999 amazing words and missed one.
Right.
And I don't feel that's a fair standard to hold people to.
Yeah.
You know, we try to, because there's a human being that wrote those scripts who worked incredibly hard to create this for you.
Mm-hmm.
And I just try to encourage people to keep it in mind and just try to keep sight of the people behind the scenes doing this work, because they care more than you could ever imagine they care.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was tough, but we fixed it. We don't have any pride. We didn't ignore it. We fixed it, and now it's perfect. So they're happy. I didn't see any follow up from them about it being fixed, but it's been fixed. So
you probably didn't hear anything back from them because you fixed it, and they realized how stupid they were to do that in the first place. Hopefully,
or they just, you know, it's just sometimes people just take a shot and move on. They don't think about
that's true. Yeah, that's true.
They just fire and they don't even look back to see if they hit anything. You know, I think that's an unfortunate side effect sometimes. Again, of social media and of the world we live in, I understand people are out there, and again, especially in the community, I understand how marginalized and how just disrespected folks are a lot of the times. So I understand that need to lash out and to kind of feel some kind of power at times. But you know, again, it just I always say it's really, really important to know your enemy.
Yeah,
you know, the quote Rage Against the Machine. Know your enemy for sure. But much, I think even more importantly, or certainly equally as important, is to recognize your allies and split the difference, and not, you know, and try to, I think that's just, you know, not everybody's out to get you kind of thing. So,
yeah.
But yeah. So.
So you mentioned something interesting to me that I'd like to ask you about. And you were telling me how the people that you caption and then of course audio description, two very different jobs and, you know, forms, but often are being confused to be the same thing. Why do you believe there's such a confusion over those two things, and why do people always sometimes think of them as the same thing? Where do you think that confusion comes from?
It's pretty simple. It's not confusion. I think that people understand that it's two totally separate things. I think what it is that it's laziness and simply not caring to figure it out. So what happened was, many years ago, AD's been around a while, right? So I don't know what it is. 20, 25 years ago, CBS started offering audio description. They've been offering, what year is NCIS in now? 21, something crazy like that.
Oh God, yeah.
So NCIS started having audio description in season 3, and that's because they ported over the resources from JAG. So when JAG ended, they ported that over so they had a JAG. So it's gotta be 23, 25 years, whatever.
Yeah.
So CBS started doing unrequired, unmandated, everything else. They did it, but they were smart enough to, now the Media Access Group out of Los Angeles, WGBH out of Boston, who has been involved doing audio description for many, many, many years. So that's who does that work.
Gotcha.
They were, I guess they were, I don't know what chicken or the egg, I'm sure they must have been doing the captioning first. But they'd also, they also had a whole vision of audio description.
Okay.
So that kind of just went together hand in hand.
Gotcha.
So, and they do all of CBS's stuff. I think to this day, they do all of it. I think they do all of Fox's, I want to say. I don't know if that's still true, but I used to work, when I worked at USA Network, you know, a decade ago, I was there when the federal government at some point decided to get involved, and they mandated that audio description be offered at a rate of like 40 hours a quarter of original content, which again was way too low, but it was something. It might have been 30 at that point. It's grown at some point, but so they came in. I was there, and everybody there said, "What the hell is audio description?" Nobody knew what this was. So the head of the department that I worked for, again, for USA, the head of my operations department, she just started calling around to figure out, does anybody know what this is? Who does this work?
Right.
You know? And the fact of the matter was, at that point, everybody who did captioning just said, oh yeah, we could do that.
Gotcha. Do that.
And again, now, I understand the position this woman was in. I'm not saying I would have done anything differently or better.
Right.
But she is being mandated by the federal government and being threatened with massive fines.
Right.
If this doesn't get on the air in the next 3 months.
Right.
So, you know, literally there was just this feeling of like, holy shit, what are we going to do?
Right.
So everybody that did caption just stepped up. It was the Wild West. And everybody just started throwing numbers out. And some of the numbers were really, really high because they were using union VO talent, and it just was extraordinarily expensive compared to what other companies were offering. And it's like anything else. If you get an estimate on a home patio or anything, you don't want to take the lowest bid. You don't want to take the highest bid.
Right.
Try to find somebody in the middle.
Right.
So that's what happened. So that middle kind of became the area. So what happened was, we weren't the only ones. The federal government came in at the same time, and they just said, all right, you have to, you know, they mandated five networks at the time. I think it was TNT, TBS, us, maybe it wasn't History yet. There was two others. I don't know what the other ones were, cable networks, along with the majors, you know, with CBS, NBC, Fox, and ABC, you had to offer this.
Gotcha.
So basically that's what happened. People looked around and these captioning companies said, we can do this. And people said, okay.
Gotcha.
So now what we're dealing with is 20 years later, these captioning companies have kind of just grandfathered themselves in. So it just became this thing. Because then also what happened, I was saying before, was so USA took the burden on of creating audio description. Now I'm the one who took that on. I stepped up. I said, I'll take care of this. I'll figure it out. And I worked with the head of the department then, who's no longer there, and another woman by the name of Cindy Pachita, who is still at USA. And Cindy and I coordinated, and we got lucky in some ways where, you know, the stuff that we had in syndication at that point on USA, NCIS, CSI, there was another one. Those two especially, those are CBS products.
Right.
So those tracks already existed from CBS originally, and GBH had created them. So we were able to reach out and coordinate a deal where we were able to get a massive influx of audio description tracks, you know, that already existed, but not only existed, but existed in the absolute best quality possible.
Right.
So we just got lucky.
Right.
And from that relationship, I was able to, you know, everything we started doing started going, we started using GBH for a lot of our stuff, movies, anything we needed to get captioned, or not captioned, but captioned and or audio description went to them. And again, just by luck, we were a really good company doing really good work. It could have been, I could have gone a different direction, you know, and it would have been completely different.
Right.
Now, at that point, Law and Order SVU was the other big one. We had like, we were just trying to find stuff that we had big numbers of. So we sent that out to another company that no longer exists, that did captioning, and said, hey, we can do this. And they were literally just figuring it out. They had no idea what they were doing. They just saw big dollar signs, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars of work. And we sent the work out, and frankly, it came back mixed results. Some of those tracks, and I know some of the people now, I still work with some of them who wrote those tracks, were really, really great. And some of those tracks were fairly terrible. It really was just hit or miss. And that's kind of how it happened. So So then what happened was these companies, because of this scramble and the amount of money, we're talking like seven figures, you know, like to get this stuff. We're not talking a few dollars. It took a substantial investment to do this work. And, you know, at that point, I think a lot of the companies kind of looked around and realized that their asses were hanging out a little bit. Mm-hmm. And they didn't want to take the wrath of the community if this product wasn't good.
Right, right.
They wanted a scapegoat. So at that point, they started putting the onus back on, like I was saying before, the production company. So if you were creating an original show for a TNT or a TBS or a USA network, that point in the contracts for the, you know, your deal with the network, in those contracts was that you were going to provide the captioning and the audio description when you delivered to us. You were going to deliver it with the AD and with the captioning. So at that point, the companies that have been doing the captioning for 20 years just got grandfathered in. So a lot of this work, a lot of it started back then. So that's the genesis of that. So unless it got grandfathered in with like a GBH at the time, it got grandfathered in to some other companies that were just awful. And those companies are still out there. They're still doing a substantial more amount of audio description than I do a year. And take that for what it's worth. They, you know, that's why there's so much subpar. So again, so now you're trying to convince those people are all gone because the way the television and the media companies work, you know, every 5 years we have massive turnover. You see it all the time. There's layoffs. So what's happening now is people are getting thrust into new roles and some at streaming services, like the story I told before about like, hey, we're going to go with the person doing the captioning for the series that really we should be doing. So these people are getting thrust into these new roles, these new and getting thrust upon these new responsibilities. So we're just basically seeing the next generation of people being told they have to offer this service and having no idea what it is and not taking 10 minutes to figure it out.
Gotcha.
So that's the long and short of why we're at where we're at.
I appreciate it. That was really, really informative. And I that was awesome. I enjoyed that very much. Thank you for that. So it sounds like you have quite the substantial history when it comes to television. It sounds like, you know, the stuff that you're doing nowadays kind of, you know, originated from the work that you were doing with USA.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah,
100%. Again, I was there at USA when this came in. Everybody looked around, no idea what was going on.
Right.
At that point, I had gone to film school. I had a background in screenwriting. I, at the time, thought I could do voiceover work. It's a stupid idea, but I thought I could do that. No,
yeah.
I can't. everybody who talks thinks they can do voiceover work.
Yeah, I fall into that category. I'm like, I can do it. And then I'm like, no, I couldn't do it.
you probably could do it. But I think you two guys. So I just volunteered, you know, just out of sheer, you know, arrogance, like I could do that. I could write a script and I can voice a track and I could do all that. So they were like, all right, you know, you want to take it on, take it on. So, you know, a couple of things happened there. I started working again. I was able to, I called again, this is a step that, you know, it doesn't seem like that leap, much of a leap in terms of smarts, but it's one a lot of people haven't taken. I called the National Federation of the Blind and I just said, can I talk to somebody about audio description? Like, what do you want to know about it? And I was like, what is it? You know, where do you guys think I should go? Talk. And they are the ones who actually steered me to the folks at WGBH, a woman by the name of Linda Idoni at the time, who's no longer there, who's just one of the more lovely humans I've met in this industry. So I got to talking to Linda. And then again, through them, just by dumb luck, we found NCIS and CSI Tracks and then start a relationship with them. And so we were lucky to go down that road. But in the meantime, you know, in the same vein, you know, we decided to write a script of AD, which I wish I still had. I don't think I still have it. I would love to go back and look at just how awful that script is that I wrote. It's probably better than a lot of the stuff being made today, but it's just now at IDC, it's trash, but we did it. I wrote the script and we went in and we did a demo, a proof of concept, so to speak, for USA and did the track from scratch. And then that led to building an entire wing of audio suites and editing bays, the whole build out at the facility where we were working. And the idea at that point was to stay and kind of usher in the new generation of audio projects, including audio description. My thought was I could take on and start, you know, doing all of NBC's work, not only for the cable outlets, but also, you know, the main hub as well, the main channel and all the cable, you know, Bravo and, and USA and Sci-Fi and all those places at the time. And now, of course, Peacock. And so that was the ultimate end game. And that's the path I was going down. And then they just, you know, again, just came through and just cleaned the house. My entire apartment went, me along with it, just flushed out. And that was it. I thought, all right, well, that was a definite gut punch.
Yeah.
I spent 4 or 5 years building that. And there were certainly a lot of promises made to me that were not kept and all of that. But, you know, lesson learned. I didn't regret learning and figuring that out. So I thought I was done with AD. I tried to find another job in operations and all that stuff, and it didn't work. And then I was going into sales, a totally separate, weird sales direction. And then I saw this ad pop up for Audio Describe project manager or something for IDC. I forget what the title of the role was, but they had just kicked the department off, like I said, and they had done like one or two projects, and I applied. And frankly, even today, I shouldn't say nobody, but there's one, you count on one hand missing a couple of digits of people in New York, in the metropolitan area, that have as much experience in the field as I do at this point. And I applied, and I got a call. I figured I would. It took a little while, but I got a call. And I went in and I met with Marcy Gilbert, who's the head and the owner of the company, and Scott Carroll, who's the head of our dubbing department at IDC now, who was the person who founded the AD department that I kind of took the baton from, so to speak, and ran with. And I met with them. It was a Thursday or Friday. We had like an hour interview, and I think they hired me Monday. And then that was it. I just came over. And so I was done with AD. And then I was lucky enough to come in, and I had Dakota Green was there already, who's still with me, who's just, again, one of the top five, you know, 10, if I'm being really generous to everyone else, writers in the business. He was already there. Stephen Christopher was already there, who kind of bounced in and out. He does, you know, a lot of QC work with the company at the time. He's now with me full time for the last couple of years, but he kind of bounced in and out for a little while. But he is, again, one of the top 3 to 5 writers in the industry. And then I had a man by the name of Brandon Harrison who was there, who had come from GBH, coincidentally, in Los Angeles. So Brandon and I kind of had a similar introduction and standard that we had for how to approach AD and how a script should look and how things should sound. So we were able to kind of apply a lot of what we learned to what we were doing at IDC. A very, very much the DNA of what we do at IDC is very much the DNA taken from WGBH and Media Access Group. So I owe them a lot in terms of the things I learned. We've certainly expanded upon that. And I certainly think we stand on our own 2 feet quite well now, but the early building blocks were certainly, you know, honed from a lot of what I learned in those days with them. And and then I got Liz Gutman came through the door maybe a year later. You know, and interviewed, and I just immediately, it was just one of those things, like she sat down, we talked, 30 minutes later she left. Scott's like, well, all right, who do you want to talk to next? And I'm like, nobody. cancel everything. That's who I'm hiring. And he's like, what do you mean? And we had talked to like one other person. He's like, you want to talk to other, are you sure? And I was like, yeah, I said, I'm gonna hire her. And he was like, okay. And I'm gonna walk you out. And she'll tell you the story if you ever talked to her. I like literally followed her down to the street. I think I kind of weirded her out a little bit because I just knew instantaneously that like, this is the person I want to hire. She's what's missing. She's the missing ingredient to all this. And I was 1,000% right. Like I've never been as right about anything in my life as hiring Liz Gutman. And her, again, I already had this amazing team with Dakota and Steven, and Brandon's gone on to other things at this point. But when Liz came in and I got to kind of combine her with the others that were already there, that's when it all just flipped on its head and just kind of went full steam ahead. And everything you hear today, you know, like I said, we were lucky enough, the ACB gave us their award last year for excellence in the field, which meant so much to everybody. Yeah. And in my acceptance speech, I told Liz, I said, I literally couldn't have done any of this without her. You know, I owe her everything. So that's the genesis. So that's what happened. And that's, she is very much, again, she is the one that, like, I keep the train running, you know what I mean? I keep it on the track.
Yeah.
But she's the one that's in the engine room, you know, she's the one that's got, you know, got everybody else. She's running things, you know, she's got everybody doing what they're supposed to do and all that. I'm the one that just makes sure we get to the station on time, but she's the one doing the heavy lifting. And she, you know, that was her commitment to the reaching out to the community, her commitment to evolving, her commitment to the standards and to just doing better. Now, we were already doing great work when she showed up, but now we're doing exceptional work. And she is, you know, 100% to thank for that, along with Dakota and Steven and now Betty. And I had Richie Pepio in between, who's gone on to some other things. I've had some people leave me to go on, which I thank them for their contributions. And, you know, but we've been really lucky. I've been really lucky that the people that have left have given me amazing efforts, and the people that have replaced them have fit in so well and have come in and just wanted to get better. They've come from other companies that did subpar work. Mm-hmm. They reached out to us and they recognized it. And they said, "Hey, I love this work. I'm not doing it as well as I know I can do it. Mm-hmm. I want to come learn from Lay, learn from Toad and Steven and you. And can I come and learn?"
Right.
That's where Betty Capoe came in. That's where Katie Finn has come in. That's where some other folks that have come on board recently that are getting up to speed to our standards, because it's a commitment. You have to. Mm-hmm. You can't just come in and write for us. You can't. Mm-hmm. You can't just show up. We will. Mm-hmm. We will ask you to leave if you are, because we're not to be funny about it, but like, we have a standard. And again, a lot of people are out there doing a lot of credits to their name from some of these companies we talked about, and just frankly, they're honestly shocked when I tell them it's not cutting it. They don't understand, because they've never gotten any feedback. It's not their fault.
Right.
No one's ever told them,
right,
this isn't good enough, you know, and they're shocked when we'll give them 3 pages of notes back on a half hour show. And they've literally never received a single note in 5 years. So if you think about that, it's hard to blame them.
Right.
But a lot of people are just, why am I, you know, a lot of people unfortunately just say, I can make more money working faster, doing, you know, worse work.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd rather just make more money and feed my family. And I can't blame people for that.
Right.
But I'm lucky where the people that come in and stick with us full time, it's again, a commitment beyond themselves, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And we take it seriously. And if you come in and you learn from us, you can do it anywhere. That's for sure. Mm-hmm. And I've had people do that. They come in and learn from us, and then they just, you know, they just went off and, you know, started their own companies, which is mind blowing to me. They shouldn't have, but they did. And that's fine. So, you know, that's the genesis of all that happening. So it all started NBC. And I thought, I honestly, you told me 10 years ago, I would be talking to somebody on a podcast about audio description. I first want to know what a podcast was. and I would say there's no way I'm still doing audio description 10 years
ago. Yeah. It's awesome. Like, you know, you did that work with the company, and you kind of like, you know, started kind of like the foundation, and then, you know, you thought, oh, I'm never gonna do this now that, you know, they basically swept me under the rug, you know, just pushed me out. And then all that work that you had done to kind of, you know, start the genesis, you ended up going back to and using when you went to IDC. And I just think that's amazing, because you never know when the work that you're doing is going to actually come back and be important to you again.
And just in terms of building teams, and, you know, I've run into this in the last year. I'm not looking to go anywhere right now. I love where I'm at. I have an amazing team. I, our leadership, Marcy Gilbert and on down, Rosanna Marino out in LA, they are really great and smart people to work for, and, you know, fully supportive of everything we want to do and all that. So there are pluses and minuses to working for big corporations and small companies,
right.
But, you know, certainly small company, there's a lot of support here, and I'm very grateful for that. So I'm not looking to go anywhere, but, you know, frankly, you know, I've been doing this a while, so I do have recruiters reach out to me, and I do have people, you know, overture me about other positions and things. And the thing I run into a lot now is podcasting. People want me to take on podcasting for them. And, you know, they talk to me, and I explain everything I do with audio description and overseeing engineers and the writing and the team of the writers and the millions of dollars of budgets I oversee and the quality and all that stuff, the awards and everything else. And then it always comes back to the same question. Like, have you never done a podcast? And I'm like, Well, no, but I've done all this other stuff that's much much harder.
Yeah.
You know, like I have, but so that's, so, you know, that's the thing I tell people and why I'm bringing this up is like, to your point, you know, yeah, you're accumulating skills and you're accumulating experience as you go through life. And it just takes one person to understand and see the value in it.
Yeah.
And go, oh yeah, of course you can do this thing. I compare it a lot to this whole podcast thing that's exploding now. It's, it makes me laugh a lot because, you know, it, I feel like someone, like, they contacted me and they're like, you know, like I'm applying to build furniture or something, you know, IKEA. And, you know, and I've been able to cut, you know, like, I feel like that's a, I feel almost like that. Sometimes I my head's spinning. I feel like I've been able to go out. It's like, if you're and cut a tree down, you go to IKEA and they're like, but you never assembled anything with an Allen wrench. And you're like, no. You know, and that's how it's bizarre. It's the analogy I've come up with. It's just a bizarre thing now where people that are being tasked with hiring people to do podcasts are not seeing the value in people like from my realm who worked in this or in creative audiobooks so much. They're so focused, singly focused on this one thing, this one box to check that. So that's, I think that's a big reason why a lot of podcasts sound pretty terrible right now is that, you know, you're not, and that, again, if anyone's listening to this, it's, don't call me, I'm not interested, but there are people out there that come from this realm that could be doing a lot more interesting audio sound and sound design and soundscape for you. And, you know, you're really missing the boat on a lot of talent if you're being so singularly focused on the ability to have, you know, to mic people up talking across the table to each other.
Right.
It seems kind of silly to me. So audio in generally interests me at this point, and I'm curious to see where all podcasting goes and where some of these other products go, because I think podcasting could be a hell of a lot more interesting to listen to. I think audiobooks could be more interesting to listen to.
Oh yeah, love audiobooks.
And certainly, you know, audio description, it could be much more interesting. You were saying before, if you're not ignoring the mix, if you're not ignoring the script and the way the vocal performance goes. So there's a lot more room for improvement, and there's a lot of people out there that are very skilled. And I've lost a lot of engineers, audio guys, the last few years, because they do work with me, and, you know, they learn and then they get poached from other companies and completely different things. I've lost people to video games. I've lost people to mixing for major motion pictures. I've lost people to overseeing departments of major sport organizations, audio for them, all out of working with me in audio description. So it just, you know, and they're all thriving. So, you know, it's just one of those things that people kind of get very tunnel visioned on what they're looking for in life. So I guess that's the point of all that is. So yes, I went through all that. It didn't work out with NBC. I would say it certainly worked out for me at IDC.
Yeah.
And again, we came on the air here, I was telling you, I'm going to be trying to expand our audio department to other areas coming up in the next few months, hopefully. You know, I'm in conversations with the owner of my company, and she's very receptive, and we're trying to figure out some new, fun, creative stuff to do with audio that I would never get to do in a big corporation.
Yeah.
Even though it's going to be awesome, and the work's going to be amazing, and the end result is going to be just, I think, I'm so excited to let everybody hear it, but it would take years. It would take years of meetings. Just minutia to actually get to the point of doing it. Whereas at a small company, I can go into my owner and be like, hey, here's my idea. And she said, that sounds interesting. Let's do it. And that's really the extent of the conversation. So yeah, I mean, that's the thing. So I tell a lot of young people, I certainly wish I was younger where I was now, because I'd like to have another 5 or 10 year lead head start on the next phase.
Yeah.
But, you know, you can't get too hung up on that, because you know, you never know. Sometimes you don't know why you're going through it until many years down the road, and you get pulled back and be like, oh, right, I did that, you know, 8 years ago, and I can use that in this situation. So, so yeah, you never know.
Yeah, I can get it, especially, you know, now that audio description is exploding as much as it is. I mean, it's starting to just take over the industry and just really become kind of the focus for a lot of companies, especially streaming sites. But like you said, and you've touched on very much so, is making sure that it's done correctly. Because like you said, for so long, it's been done quite subpar. So now everybody is really wanting it, but they're wanting it, like you said, quality, because we have the quantity, And now everybody is really looking for that quality. And I 100% believe that IDC and the work that you do definitely is bringing that quality.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah, I mean, the simple fact of the matter is, and this goes back to what we were talking about before, and this is, again, a couple pronged approach, there's just simply not enough good writers. Mm-hmm. There's not.
Mm-hmm.
There's way more work than there's qualified people to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for that is, like any other reason, the rates aren't great.
Mm-hmm.
And the crappy companies, like, so the rates haven't changed much. I've been doing mm-hmm. this for 10 years now, give or take. The rates are pretty much the same-ish.
Yeah.
So my hope was when more streaming services got involved and more people, you know, got involved, wanted to do audio description, that, you know, as a rising tide lifting all ships, so to speak, mm-hmm. you would see the rates go up. Mm-hmm. You would see the workload go up, and in turn, the investment in training people properly, which would mean that you have to pay people, because you have to pay for skill. You can't just get mm-hmm. it. You have to mm-hmm. pay for that. What happened was the opposite. These crappy companies that I was talking about yeah. around, they came in and they undercut me by 30% in some cases.
Yeah.
So, and the companies that are providing the AD are going, oh, I can get the same product for 30% less. Well, no, you're not. Yeah. You're not getting the same product. You're getting a used car versus a brand new Mercedes. You know what I mean? Like, you're not getting the same. You're getting a used car with 80,000 miles on it versus a brand new car off the lot. So you're paying a lot. You're getting what you pay for is the end result. So that's the issue, is that there's just not, we know it. Like, again, I feel the pinch now. I've got, you know, I've got six writers that I trust, give or take. Six. I've had 12, 15 others come in and out the door the last 2 years. Again, they come in, they do one project, and I can't use them. They're not good enough, but they're out there and they're working. They're doing dozens of things a month. They're not doing it for us, but they're doing it. So that's the issue. There's no set standard throughout the industry. There's no like seal of approval. There's no A rating for AD, you know, because if there was, maybe you'd start washing some of these companies out. But again, the rates have to go up. There has to be a commitment saying, hey, we're going to pay an IDC, or we're going to pay a GBH or a Deluxe or a DDW or, you know, some of the other people I'm forgetting. We're going to pay them. They're worth more. They do better work, so they're worth more. So we're going to pay them a little bit more so they can reinvest that money into training people properly so that the content and the end result can be great. And then we have this, maybe we have some backfill and some stuff that's not super difficult. Not to say that everything shouldn't be the same level, but there's certainly a difference between a backfill of a 1980s sitcom versus something like a Squid Game or a Queen's Gambit or a Bridgerton or a Witcher or something else, some of the stuff that we get to work on at IDC. So, you know, I understand that. So now, you know, there should be a rating for companies. That,
yeah.
You know, hey, IDC is an A-rated company, and this other company that, you know, is, let's say I'll call them a C, I'll be generous and call them a C level. You know, we'll give them the 30% less to work on this content that we consider not as important, or the stuff that's going to be synthetically voiced that everyone's going to hate anyway. You know, but you know, and that's, and again, to companies like Netflix, is to credit those companies, the C level, they don't work with them.
Yeah,
you know, for doing AD, they might work in other capacities. Maybe they're doing captioning. I don't know, but they're not creating audio description for them. And they closed a lot of loopholes. Some companies were taking work on years ago and then subassigning or giving it to those crappy companies. You know, kind of like cutting out the middleman kind of thing, and then just, you know, whatever, subcontracting. That doesn't fly either with companies like a Netflix who care about content and quality. They, you know, you can't just, you have to make sure that you have to be accountable for that work essentially. So that's the thing. So some, and I can't speak to all the streaming services. We don't work with all of them. We wish we did. There's certainly companies I'd love to be working with that we are starting to a little bit over the last year or so after the award and some other things. We're starting to see some companies come in, and they're coming in, they're doing a project, and then they're coming back. So that tells me they're liking the quality they're getting. So, but again, the rates are going the wrong direction.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, that's the issue. So the rates are going the wrong direction, and you know, the quantity is existing, but that's the faster people are making it, the more they're making. You know, that's because there's a set, it's paid out at a set completed minute rate. So the faster you do it, the more you make in profit, if that makes sense. So a lot of these companies are just turning and burning it, getting through it, as fast as possible, which is also not the best solution as well. So there's a lot of reasons why there's a lot of bad AD. The solutions are multifaceted, they're multi-layered. At the end of the day, it's convincing clients or providers, I should say, that they need to care about the content or the quality of the content, I should say. They need to make sure they're hiring the companies that care, like an IDC, and they need to commit, they need to resign themselves that they're going to have to pay a little extra for it. And that's a sticking point. But I say a little extra, I mean a little extra. I mean, there's you know, the cost of, you know, I've talked about this before, where there are series, there are television shows that exist in the world that an episode costs $12 to $15 million to make.
Yeah.
Which makes the audio description budget like 0.1% or something like that. It's literally 0.1% the cost for the AD track versus the actual episode of television. So why a company, I'm not saying they did, but why companies, because there's not just one example, would spend, you know, let's call it even $3 million on an episode of television and then not want to spend an extra, you know, couple hundred dollars on the AD track to ensure that you're getting something that's equivalently as good. It doesn't make sense. Why do you want to shortchange your blind consumers that way? Doesn't make a heck of a lot of sense. So that's a question they have to ask themselves. You know, over the course of a year, you're probably looking at $10,000 to $20,000 extra output of money. We're not talking a huge sum of cash here. So it just, these companies need to look within themselves and say, we're doing it. We take pride in doing it, but are we doing it the absolute best that we can? And if they ask themselves that question, I think a lot of companies would come up with an answer that no, they're not. But until the community, and again, this needs to be, I can yell about it till I'm blue in the face, but I have a dog in this race, you know, like I it's money for us. It pays my bills. It feeds my family, you know what I mean? So I'm out here petitioning for work, and it seems kind of self-serving. The push needs to come from the community. The community needs to drive the change. They need, again, to my point earlier, they need to call out the bad AD. They need to steer the providers towards the companies that are doing it well. And again, we're certainly not the only company doing it well. There's a lot of like that are doing it and cared to do it well. So that's where the change has to come from. That's where the focus needs to be. And that's how we get where we're, I think that's where we get where we all want to go, at least the people that care.
Yeah, absolutely. I was going to ask, you know, what's the solution then? But it seems, you know, people like yourselves are helping, but there definitely needs to be a bigger push from the community itself, and definitely calling out when something is bad, but then also giving them the solution to, you know, like, hey, here's IDC. You should contact them. Or be like, if it's on Twitter, it's like, hey, at Eric Wickstrom, you should. So they know, like, hey, there are people out there that, you know, they're not just doing it because they have to do it. They do it because they understand the significance of it and the impact that it's having on the community and those that you are servicing.
Yeah, and there's, and frankly, there's people out there that are very, let's just say, very interested in being looked upon as the face of audio description. I'm not one of those people. You know, I've done a bunch of these podcasts, and I'll continue to do them, especially if folks from the community ask me to do them. I'm always happy to come on and talk, and Liz is always happy to come on and talk. And she's a lot more interesting than I am. So I always recommend you reach out to her as well. So we're always happy to do these things and do the panels and do all that stuff as well. Yeah. But it's I lost my train of thought there a little bit, but I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought.
you were just saying, you know.
Oh, I know what I'm saying. Thank you. So I'm not looking to be the face of AD.
Right.
I can speak for Liz. She's not looking to be the face of AD, but there are people out there that are very interested in being looked upon as the face of AD, being, you know, one of the pillars of the community and blah, blah, blah. And they are, in my opinion, self-serving.
Yes.
And they are, and again, they're out there, they're trying to feed their families too. So, you know,
of course.
So, you know, you have to understand where people are coming from. Everybody's trying to do right by them and theirs. So, but you can't be out there preaching quality and inclusion and standards And then putting yourself out there as the face of audio description, as the leading, you know, expert in the field, and then turn around and do work with these shitty companies that I'm talking about.
Right.
You know? Because what you're doing then is, and here's the thing. So they're out there, they're preaching all this quality, all this accountability. Then they're working with these crap companies. But by doing that, they're almost adding legitimacy to the outsiders looking in. So if you're an outsider looking in, you're at a streaming company, and you just got put into a new role, and you go out there and you say, hey, I need to get AV done. Oh, this person is the permanent expert in the field, and they're the number one person in the voiceover community or whatever it is. And I'm going to talk to them. Well, that person's then going to say, oh, you should hire this company because that company is going to hire them because they have a side deal. Mm-hmm. They got a side hustle that if they bring the work in, they get to voice it or they get to write it or they get to engineer it or whatever role they're bringing to that product. That's, you know, so you just got to know what you're dealing with. Mm-hmm. And so, again, they're out there. They're screaming accountability and quality and all this stuff, but they're enabling these bad companies to not only get more work, but much more frighteningly form new relationships and new partnerships with companies that don't know any better. So that's the problem. And again, that's where the community needs to get involved, and the community needs to be the ones that are referenced and asked about quality and about who to work with. Well, if you're asking individual contractors who to work with, well, lo and behold, you're going to wind up working with companies that they're already working with, regardless of how good they are, you know? So that's the thing. So just because they're the loudest person in the room, just because someone's in the room screaming, look at me, look at me, look at me, doesn't mean they're worth a second glance.
Right. In
terms of this. So that's what I would caution people about. And that's why, you know, again, people want to work with us. They're going to get the standards. I don't care if it's, I say this all the time. I don't care if it's a top title that you've heard of that's been streamed 10 million times this year, or if it's some part four of some horror film that literally five people watched. We take the same approach to those things. You know, Liz Gutman writes Bridgerton. She also writes B-level schlockfest horror films for clients. Because somebody, and I've said this many times before, somebody out there is really looking forward to that track.
Yeah.
That terrible film that nobody else cares about. They're so excited that it's coming. And so we owe that person the same quality and standards that we bring to this stuff that everybody's excited about.
Yeah.
Because that's our role. Our role is to serve the blind community, whatever that looks like. And that doesn't mean we get to pick and choose when we do it, or we just have to do it across the board. So again, if you just set that standard and you bring that approach to every project, you don't have these problems. You know, of quality, generally speaking. So yeah, I mean, that's a lot. That's the big overview. That's a lot of the issues, the problems, the solutions. I can't be part of them. It's not my role. It's not my place to be out there to try to solve these problems. All I can do is again, when contracted, to make sure we do the best work possible. And hopefully continue along with some of my contemporaries, like I said, like somebody like a Reese at this group of viewers, try to lead by example and try to just, again, do the work as well as we can do it. So hopefully people catch up to the fact that it doesn't have to be bad or even marginally good. It could always be very good or exceptional.
That's it. Absolutely. And for people that are maybe looking for some resources out there, are there any places they can go if like they want to invest in audio description, or, you know, kind of help, you know, bolster it and make sure that, you know, these companies that are doing the quality work are getting noticed more. So, you know, are there any good resources for people to reach out to, or can people email some of your writers and just ask them for, you know, pointers to make them better? What's the best way for them to learn and, you know, to be educated?
Well, it depends how they want to learn, what they're interested in learning about. So if you want to learn writing, again, there's descriptive video retreats or audio description retreats, I should say. That is taught by a woman by the name of Colleen and Liz, my head writer. They partner on that. Liz just took over teaching responsibilities a few months ago on that. That is a master class. Now, if you're interested in audio description writing and as a career or as a path, now a lot of people think that class is kind of like a hobby, or people that are retired that are just interested, or different people take it for different reasons. And that they're all, listen, anybody who's interested in audio description, L research and all you know, it, interest, we encourage all interest, so to speak, and I don't want to push anyone away from doing that. But if you want to learn writing, brass tacks writing, that's the place to go do it.
Yeah.
It's not what you call cheap.
Right.
You know, it's definitely an investment. You got to spend some money. There is a fee, there's a waiting list, there's a tuition, obviously, and it's a four-day intensive workshop. But with that said, you get what you pay for.
Right.
And you're getting access to who I feel is one of the premier minds in the field. And you have access to Ron Federer for 4 days. And she's just not only just an amazing writer, she's just also one of the best human beings you ever want to meet. So that's where I would say, if you're really serious about it. Now, there's other people out there, Dr. Joel Schneider. I know he does workshops throughout the country. He is, you know, one of the originators in the field and one of the pioneers in the field. He's still out there. He's still teaching. I think that's a certainly worthy building block and a worthy foundation. I would say, and I would say this too, I've never met Dr. Schneider, and I certainly would welcome the opportunity to have a conversation with him. I do feel like we're touching on before. I feel like he is still with that original blueprint in a lot of ways. He, in fairness, he kind of wrote a lot of the rules.
So right.
Why wouldn't you follow your own rules that you wrote? So I think that, I think that's a great place to start.
Yeah.
I think that, I think it's an amazing place to start, and I would encourage anybody to take his class and to really learn the nuts and bolts of audio description. But then you're going to need to take it a step further and kind of, and again, look into how things have evolved a little bit the last couple of years and how we're approaching things differently. But as far as the foundation goes, I think that's, there are not many better places to start. And there's Louise Fryer is a woman, a professor in the UK. She wrote a book on audio description that is, it's an academic textbook, I believe, but it's available out there, and it's a fantastic resource. Liz has read it, and she learned, Liz learned a lot from it. So if Liz is learning a lot from it, then chances are most people can.
Right.
So that's a tremendous resource that I would recommend. So as far as the writing goes, those are some places you could look to start. The voiceover stuff. So the voiceover stuff is, you either have a good voice for it or you don't. Like, I don't. So that's fine. Now, that's not to say you can't improve. You
right.
can take classes. You can do all that. I would say, again, if I employ 50 audio description narrators a year, 48 of them started with me doing AD. None of them had any formal training. I've trained all of them. I've worked with all of them. They're all great. They all sound great. There are people out there that are charging sums of money to train, to do extensive workshops on specifically audio description narration. I don't think that's necessary, frankly, especially if you're going to do that, there are worthwhile, if you are serious about a career in voiceover, number one, you're going to have to invest in the proper equipment. First and foremost, a microphone. You don't have to spend a fortune, a couple hundred bucks. You can get a great microphone. We've had a lot of success with the Rode NT1. It's like a $200 mic. It sounds awesome for AD. So, you know, Mike, you're going to need a preamp. You're going to need some good headphones. Obviously, you already have your computer. You're going to need a good soundproof space. You're going to have to invest. You're going to have to spend $600,000. You're going to have to invest. And if you're serious, so that's the first place you have to start. You have to invest in the equipment. Then if you want to take a workshop, I would encourage people to take a more well-rounded workshop that is more focused on, you know, maybe animation, dubbing, the commercial work, narration in terms of corporate narration, that kind of stuff. That's going to teach you about breathing and about cold reading and about, you know, tone and pacing and all those kind of stuff. I don't think, you know, then once you've done that, I think you could then reach out. And again, if you, it's amazing how people ever reach out to me that have these amazing demos, somebody like a Ren Leach, we're talking about at the beginning of this. Ren didn't have any AD experience. And he, after he did two projects with me, he was like, I'm thinking about taking a workshop on AD narration. And I said, Ren, what? I was blown away by it. I was like, Ren, there's literally nothing they can teach you. Like, there's nothing, they're going to take your money and you're not going to learn a thing. You don't need to be taught anything. And I think that generally speaking, if you're a professional voiceover person, breaking into AD is hard. It is. Like you said, it's a growing field. But the people that are doing it have been part of it for a long time. So those companies that are doing the overwhelming amount of the work poorly, they've been working with the same writers, unfortunately. But more importantly, they're working with the same voiceover people. Now, the voiceover people are good. You know, they're just working with bad scripts.
Right.
Morgan Freeman can't make a bad script good, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So you're working with what you got. So But those narrators, they're protecting that work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, you know, you reach out to a narrator that works in AD, you want to get involved in AD, they're not going to help you get involved in AD.
Mm-hmm.
Why would they? They're talking big money. This is how they pay their mortgage. They want you in there doing that work. So breaking in very rarely has anything to do with talent. Mm-hmm. It's just, you need somebody to give you a shot. You need somebody to give you a chance. And then I think like, again, Ren would tell you, like, he's done multiple projects with me now. He's got a legitimate demo for Audition. It sounds amazing. It sounds actually too good. Like, his voiceover is, it's better than the content. The track sounds better than the actual movie. So he doesn't need, but there's just people out there that, again, there's a lot of people out there that will, if you want to give them money, they're happy to take it.
Yeah.
I mean, but you got to ask yourself, what am I getting for that?
Exactly.
Are they helping me get work after this? Mm-hmm. Are they introducing me to people in the industry? Or are they going to call Eric and say, hey, I've got this great person for you?
Mm-hmm.
The answer is no, because I've never gotten a phone call about these people. So as far as voiceover goes, the equipment's the most important thing. I would take some generalized workshop courses. Mm-hmm. If you're community college, there's a lot of courses being offered in towns across the country, those secondary education stuff, breaking the voiceover, like, is that going to be like, you know, is it going to get you started on a career? No, but, you know, for $50, what do you expect? Mm-hmm. You know, but it's going to give you an overview. Voiceover for Dummies. I'm sure there's a book. You're going to learn just as much. And the $40 you're going to spend on that is going to be just as valuable for the most part than that $300 you give somebody or whatever the number is. I don't know. I'm just spitballing a number.
Right.
What they're going to teach you about doing voiceover work for AD. So again, grain of salt. I know people are desperate to break in. They see a big opportunity. The cash grab. A, it's not that easy to get into. People that are here doing it have been doing it for a very long time. They are not opening the doors for anyone. They are, in fact, shutting those doors in people's faces because they're trying to protect the work. So, you know, I get hit up 5 times a week, some weeks, from people in the industry, professional, great sounding voiceover people that would sound amazing on AD tracks.
Yeah.
They would. And again, I already employ the most diverse roster in the industry. 40 to 50 people different a year, including 14 to 16 blind and visually impaired people right now. So I'm turning away dozens of people a year. Professional people who have resumes as long as your arm, I'm turning them away. So, and it's not because they're not talented, it's because I'm all stocked up.
Right.
But keep this in mind, so is everybody else. They're all stocked up.
Right.
So again, the opportunity to break in, I'm not discouraging people. If this is your dream, then chase it.
Mm-hmm.
But understand what you're getting into. It's a very, very slim opportunity to get in. And then if you get in, the idea that you're going to make a living doing it, it maybe supplement, it's a side hustle. You know, my top narrator, you know, Sri Gordon is probably my top narrator that I work with in terms of amount of projects a year. She does maybe 20 or 30 a year with me.
Mm.
You know, and I do hundreds of projects a year. So again, some companies, they use is a man and a woman. All they use.
Right.
But it's the same man and woman. So you're not getting in there either.
Yeah.
So again, go for it. I would keep your expectations in check. You know, you're not going you're not going to break in, do an AD track, and then a year from now have, you know, $100,000 of income. It's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
It's literally never going to happen. So I think if people have a reasonable expectation, and they get in and just, again, approach it as a hobby or as a side hustle or something that, you know, again, if you can make $1,000 a month doing it, you know, it's not bad. It's, you know, it's a few mortgage payments.
Yeah.
You know, it's certainly, you know, if you could take that approach to it, I think that's a worthwhile thing. And then the last aspect of that, breaking in engineering, I think I've had a lot of luck with people that come from music backgrounds for some reason. I don't know if it's because they're very good with music backgrounds and audiobook backgrounds. I've had a lot of success from that. I think the number one skill you need to be a good audio engineer for audio description, at least to work for IDC, is Pro Tools. Mm-hmm. You need to be an expert level of Pro Tools user, you know, to run a live session, to run that board correctly. Because again, time is money. The faster we work, the more we make.
Mm-hmm.
We're not cutting corners for quality, but we still need to move as quick as possible because literally every extra hour is cutting to our profits. So it's super of paramount importance that we move as fast as possible as the highest quality we can. So if you want to be an engineer, you need to be able to record in Pro Tools on the fly very quickly. and you need to know the mix in Pro Tools at an expert level. And when I say expert, you need to be a 10 out of 10. Mm-hmm. So you, if you want to work in engineering, do audio, yeah, that's where I would say, again, for an IDC. There's other companies that use other programs, Reaper, and there's other things that they're probably using, but I think Pro Tools is kind of where we're at, especially I know from what I've heard Pro Tools and from blind engineers that we've worked with and coordinated with, that seems to be the most user-friendly for accessibility standpoint. That could be changed. This is going back a year and a half, 2 years ago, so I can't speak to that with full knowledge at this point, but that's what I've heard over the years. So that's what I tell people, you know, take a Pro Tools course and just Pro Tools, Pro Tools, Pro Tools. Like that's what you want to be able to do. So those are the answers to that in terms of breaking in. And again, keeping in mind, no one is getting rich in audio description. Maybe someday, but not now and not in the near future. So if you want to get involved, have a reasonable expectation of the money you're going to make and have a reasonable expectation of what that workload is going to look like. So that's it. And if you're blind and visually impaired, feel free to hit me up.
All right. Directly.
If you want to do narration, I say this every time, hit me up directly. And if you have a professional setup and you are a professional voiceover person, then yes, we can talk and I will probably find a project for you to voice. I always love bringing people in and working with them. And like I said, I'll give you one. And if it goes well, I'm sure we'll find other work to do together.
Right.
So I'm always happy. And the same pitch, if any of my competitors are just tuning in or people are still listening to me ramble on at this point, to my competitors, that if you're interested in working with blind talent and visually impaired talent, you can hit me up on Twitter. I'm pretty easy to find and send me a direct message. And I will be happy to get on a phone call and talk about workflows. And I will be happy to provide you my full list of talent, blind and visually impaired talent, with their contact information. And I will introduce you and I will get you, if you're really serious about doing it, I will help you do it. These are not trade secrets. I am not, you know, trademarking any of these workflows. I want to share them. My hope in the beginning when we started doing this work was that we would start doing the work and then other companies would follow suit and start, you know, really trying to integrate blind and visually impaired talent. And then I'm saddened by the fact that more than 2 years down the road, we're still in the minority, not the majority of companies doing this work. And that's unfortunate. And I make this pitch every time. If you are a competitor of mine and you want to reach out, I will make time. I will get on a phone call. I will get on multiple phone calls. I will, whatever I do to make the relationship happen for you in the community, I will do. Now, to this point, only Reese at the Scripted Video Works has taken me up on that. He reached out. We got on a phone call. I talked workflows. I provided him my contact list. He has hired people from that list. He is actually walking the walk and not just talking the talk.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a real thing. I held up my end. He held up his end and he's making it happen as well. But he's the only one I've heard from. So I'm here, you know, hit me up, reach out. And I would love to, you know, I'd love to help other people get involved with the community and do this work. So that's it. That's really all I got for you, Chad. Is there anything else?
No, that was perfect. Thank you so much, Eric, for coming down and just talking with me today. I really enjoyed talking with you. I learned a lot myself. You know, you really had so much for me to learn from, and hopefully everybody that was listening had a good time, because, well, if you did it, I sure did. So, but hey, thank you so much for sitting down with me today. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you, Chad. And again, if anybody wants to, you know, on Twitter, you can find me at IDC_Eric, and you can find Liz at the flip, Liz_IDC. And you can find us and follow us. And again, we love hearing feedback, good and bad. We'd love to hear from everybody. And if you're a talent that happens to be blind that wants to reach out and is interested in doing some work, hit me up. And that's where you can find me if you want to talk through workflows too. So that's it, Chad. Thank you. Have a great long weekend. I'm sure this will debut, but it's Memorial Day coming up. So I'll look forward to this debuting. And yeah, thanks for having me. It's always great to talk AD.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. And for all you guys listening out there, first, thank you guys so much for listening to today's episode. We truly appreciate it. Remember, if you ever have any questions for my guests but are a little too shy to ask them yourselves, please email me. You can reach me at cmbouton. That's C M as in Michael, B as in boy, CMBOUTON at yahoo.com. Again, CMBOUTON at yahoo.com. If you want to follow the podcast on Twitter, we have a Twitter page. It's at 2200 hindsight. That's at 20200 hindsight, at 2200 hindsight. Also, if you know anybody that would like to listen to the podcast, please share with them that we are on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Anchor. Hindsight is 20/200. Just remember to put the slash in between the 2200. Hindsight is 20/200. All right. Well, thank you so much. And thank you again to my amazing guest, Eric Wickstrom, the head of audio design and description over at IDC. It was great to talk to him, and I hope you guys enjoyed. But until we see each other again, please remember to be safe, be kind, and take care. Enjoy the weekend, guys. Bye.